This is Scott Becker with the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. I'm thrilled today to be joined by Dr. Edward Lee. Dr. Lee is with the Permanente Federation, the huge medical group that works with Kaiser Permanente. He's also a physician himself. He's got a couple different titles. Part of that's Executive Vice President of Information and also an Executive Director, Associate Executive Director in Northern California. Dr. Lee, let me ask you to do this because you'll do a better job than me. Can you take a moment to introduce yourself?
Great. No, thank you so much, Scott, and I appreciate the opportunity. I'm very thrilled to be talking to you today. My name is Ed Lee, and I'm an intro medicine physician with the Permanente Medical Group. I've been practicing medicine in our group in Northern California for the past 16 years and do serve, as you mentioned, as the Associate Executive Director overseeing technology in Northern California, and also have a role with the Permanente Federation as the Executive Vice President and Chief Information Officer. I was actually born in Kaiser Permanente in San Francisco, and my parents still live in San Francisco and still receive care at KP at the very same location where I was born. So both from a family and personal health standpoint, as well as from a professional standpoint, KP has been part of my life for many, many years now.
And so take a moment on KP, because KP, Kaiser Permanente, has had this incredible evolution over the last 50 to 70 years, from its sort of founding to sort of treat Kaiser Steel families and so forth, to where it's at today is sort of the way out in front of everybody on sort of value-based care and as an organization. Talk a little bit about the what you've seen in the last 15, 16 years in terms of the evolution of Kaiser Permanente.
A lot has happened over the past 15, 16 years. And in fact, my career at the Permanente Medical Group over the past 16 years has allowed me to witness that firsthand. I'll start by way of a little bit of background of how I ended up at Kaiser Permanente, which is I initially came out of medical school thinking I'm just going to focus my time being the best physician I can for my patients. And in fact, I went to residency at UC Davis in the primary care track, knowing that my career would be in primary care medicine. And that was the type of medicine I wanted to practice. And so one of the many reasons I wanted to join Kaiser Permanente out of residency was because I knew that there was an integrated healthcare system in place that would support that career path, and that there was a strong focus on, as you mentioned, value-based care within the organization. But along the way, I never really imagined that I would be doing things other than direct patient care, but I've been fortunate enough to have opportunities that broaden my thinking that would allow me to help my patients and my colleagues. And one of the biggest things that happened over the period of time was it was in 2005 when we introduced the electronic health record at Kaiser Permanente. And it's incredible to think back over the past 15 years of how we've developed now a very robust system that may be the largest in the country and perhaps even the world that allows someone to have this type of information at their fingertips. And so not only do we have to not request paper medical records anymore, we have legible physician notes, we have ways of decreasing medical errors, providing decision support at the point of care. It's really an ideally suited care and delivery system that keeps population-level care enabling quality programs and evidence-based care using our technology systems.
And take a moment, the fascinating discussion you just mentioned, the electronic medical record, it's so interesting. So those of us that are older remember when electronic medical records were not a thing, to the war to have them become a thing, to sort of the fight over them, to physicians fighting them, hospital administrators fighting them, to then a part of the population embracing them, to now where the idea of not having electronic medical records seems like such a crazy concept. But talk a little bit about that evolution that you saw, because you were right in the heart of that throughout your entire career, really.
Yeah, no, really, because I started it with the Permanente Medical Group in 2004, and the next year after was when it was introduced. And I was one of the enthusiastic people who was waiting for this type of evolution to happen. Because of the many benefits I kind of mentioned earlier, there are others who feel it may be difficult to put information into the chart. They're spending time documenting. But at the same time, that is the type of information that we need to be able to have the data on a population level that enables our quality programs. I'll give examples of quality programs that we have around reduction in colon cancer and reduction in heart attacks. And using aggregate data allows us to see how we are doing in terms of taking care of these populations so that we can reduce colon cancer death, reduce heart attack death, allow coordination between our medical experts across our program so that we can provide more efficient and timely care as such that we do within our stroke access program. So many, many benefits I think that we have as a result of having introduced this foundational aspect with our electronic health record.
And talk a little bit about now, fast forward to now, some of the core areas in innovation, in IT delivery, some of the core trends or things that you're most focused on today.
Well, I think my job in general is to make it as easy as possible for our patients to receive high-quality care, convenient and personalized care. And on the flip side, I'm also focused on giving our physicians and our care teams the tools that they need to deliver that care. Our patients want it. They deserve it. They entrust their health to our physicians, and it's our obligation to meet those needs. And I think technology has a critical role in making that happen. Telehealth is one of our big priorities. We've been actually doing telehealth in Kaiser Permanente for decades. A lot of people think of telehealth as just video, but it also includes things like secure emails, e-visits, telephone encounters, chat, and all sorts of different types of telehealth modalities. But now more than ever with COVID, we've been using telehealth at volumes that we have never done in the past. Patients want it. They want to remain connected to the physicians, yet they want to maintain social distancing so that they can stay safe. On top of that, though, they are using it in high levels and understand that it saves them time. They don't have to drive. They don't have to park. They don't have to wait in a waiting room. And so in particular with video visits, our physicians are also seeing those benefits of being able to diagnose things that they can do over video, that they can't do over email or phone. And at the same time, the rapport that they gain when they see a patient smiling on the other end of the video stream builds that connection that I think is the very reason that many of our physicians went into medicine in the first place. Also COVID-related is a very exciting area is the use of our predictive analytics technology. We've been doing this type of predictive analytics for years as well, getting data, finding patterns, assessing risk, predicting outcomes. And with respect to COVID, we've been looking at characteristics of our COVID-positive patients, understanding who's at higher risk for running into problems, so that we can keep a closer eye on these patients, having a lower threshold for directing the patients to a higher level of care. So that's been very useful. But also around related to COVID is hotspotting. So we can look at our data, find communities where we see a higher rate of COVID, and allow our system to mobilize our resources so that we can be better prepared for caring for the COVID patients that we anticipate will be coming in through our technology hotspotting methods.
Can you also, Dr. Lee, take a moment on KP got way out in front on virtual care before COVID. It was one of the only organizations that could tout more than 56% of their visits being done versus virtual care. Let me ask you this question. I'm sure during COVID that number it tipped up even much, much higher to, you know, somewhere 80%, 90% plus that were virtual visits. What does the long term look like? Does that number, I mean, Kaiser was way ahead of the rest of the world in this. Does that number resonate then at 70%, or where does it end up regressing to, or does it regress?
Scott, I think that's an excellent question, and hard to know for sure, because we are currently in an environment with respect to the pandemic that the patients that we are seeing and taking care of want this type of telehealth to be occurring. And we want to meet those demands, meet those needs, and keep our patients safe. But I think that we can't forget that we can't do everything through telehealth as well. We have to do procedures. We have to do surgeries. There are important conversations and sensitive conversations that are just best done in person. And so while you're right, there are some numbers showing that we were around 80% telehealth at the height of COVID. And in fact, there are some specialties, for example, with our mental health specialties, where that is in the 90s. And that really actually might be an area where we continue to see very high levels of telehealth just because of the nature of the care that we provide. But where it will lie at the end, where the dust will settle, I don't think it's necessarily going to be as high as what we've seen at the height of COVID, but it's not going to be back to where we were prior to COVID, because patients have seen the virtues of telehealth as well as our physicians. And so that demand, I think, is going to continue to be there.
Kaiser got way out in front of this. Any lessons from Kaiser, from KP, Permanente on best practices on, you know, virtual care, remote care? Any quick thoughts there, Dr. Lee?
Yeah, I think the best practice around telehealth virtual care is that one is that we have to listen to our patients. We have to understand what their needs are. We have to make sure that the care that we're providing is high quality and clinically appropriate. And so much of the telehealth that we do it falls within all of that. But we have to remember that, as I alluded to earlier, we have to bring patients in when it's definitely clinically necessary. And if the patients prefer that and have reasons that they want to come in for in-person care, we definitely need to continue to accommodate that as well. So it's listening to our patients, it's understanding their needs, and doing what's best for the patients in the end.
And we are hearing that from some systems, that in fact, there are a lot of patients, even where they don't necessarily need to come in person, prefer it, that it becomes part of how they feel they're cared for, taken care of, or they feel better about their doctor visit for various different reasons. There is some of that, isn't there?
I think there is. I think there is. And some of those patients may not have ever had the experience of having a telehealth visit. And there are patients who, you know, their condition just warrants it. We know, though, that the number one predictor in terms of patients having a telehealth visit is having a prior telehealth visit. And so that tells me that the job that we're doing and the care that we're providing within our telehealth visits is meeting many of our patients' needs, where they are repeat customers after the first one. So it's something that we want to continue to keep an eye on.
Fantastic. Dr. Lee, just a pleasure visiting with you today. So informative. I want to thank you for joining the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. We would love to have you on again on almost any topic. Just a pleasure to visit with. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.